Welcome into the show. Mark Childress in for Mark Sturgis. I have a studio full of people here with me. We're going to have a lot of fun today. Thank you so much for joining us. Lots of college football talk. More people in the transfer portal. What is the transfer portal? It's really weird. We're gonna unpack that a little bit. Talk about the national championship game, NFL matchups. Open phones for the next two segments if you want to get in. 844-477-3776. A lot of Clemson fans called in yesterday. Love to hear from you again today. Gamecock fans, are you happy where you're standing going towards next year? Give us a call. First things first, here's your chance at some free money. It's the $1,000 free cash stash on ESPN Upstate. The keyword for this hour is mother. Text the keyword mother to 72881. That's 72881. Good luck to you. The $1,000 free cash stash on ESPN Upstate. So two pieces of business that I'm going to introduce everybody. Number one, thank you, Greg McKinney, for your years of service to ESPN Upstate. Great guy to hang out with. I've gotten to be on air with him just a couple of times. You know, he does the 1-4 show. I usually fill in on 4-7. Haven't had a chance to share the mic with him all that much, but a pro's pro, and he will really be missed around here. So, Greg, thanks so much for everything that you've done for us and done for the station. And then I've gotten a lot of texts and tweets and stuff in the last 36 hours or so. Mark Sturgis went under the knife yesterday, rotator cuff surgery. They drilled 5 holes in his shoulder. That sounds really painful. Cleaned out everything. He's in much better shape. I think he's still on pain medication based on some of the texts I've been getting from him recently. Diesel, I don't know if you're getting the same ones.
You mean Crown Royal?
Yes.
Pain medication?
Yes.
Canada's finest. Look at him.
Maybe mixing some things he shouldn't have, or at least saying that he might be mixing some things that he shouldn't have. But we miss you, Mark. Get healthy, and we'll get you back in here soon. So you heard world's most decent sports producer, Diesel. Also very happy to be joined again from JMI Sports, from Clemson University, Ashley Pendergast. Ashley, welcome.
Thank you again for having me.
Yeah, of course. We've got plenty of stories. Ashley's going to tell us some stories here coming up in a little bit about all of her travels with the team and national titles and things like that the last couple of weeks. And we don't get to do this often, and I'm always very thankful when we do. Richmond Weaver from his nationally syndicated radio show and podcast, Rich Take on Sports.
Thank
welcome.
You for having me. Yes, it's an honor to sit amongst greatness.
Yeah, we got a full studio here.
Exactly.
It's absolutely fantastic. So, hey, let's start with this. And Richmond, I'll start with you, and then we'll work our way back to the star of the day, Ashley, who got to go to the national championship game while we sat home and watched it on our televisions.
Yes. Although I did have a nice vantage point, just on my couch. I had easy access to the bathroom and the refrigerator, so I was
food.
Good.
You
and
would,
food, yes.
You would watch it anywhere for the result that we got, right? If
well,
you're
of course.
A Clemson fan, and everything turned out that. Just some of your initial takes, I guess, Richmond, on the ball game. What stuck out to you the most about the way that everything transpired?
Well, I think it's obviously easy to say, wow, how did the score end up like that? It was total domination by Clemson. I don't know if it was necessarily total domination, because statistically it was actually very close, other than the most important statistics, and that's the scoreboard, right?
Yep.
But I do, what I found very surprising was that just it seemed like Alabama got off of whatever game plan that they were on and didn't know how to respond. And you haven't really seen that from a Nick Saban coach team before. And I know Chuck Noll has famously said something about we're not going to get off of our game plan, because if you do get off of your game plan, then you don't have a game plan. And I think that's what happened throughout the course of the game, is that all of a sudden Alabama got off of their game plan and just was trying to freeform it and didn't know what to do, and just things started snowballing. So I think that was the most surprising thing that turned out, and that led to what the score was, 44-16.
Yep, I think that's good. Ashley, you had a different vantage point. Were you down on the field during the game, or were you in the press box?
So I was on the field pre- and post-game, but I actually got to sit on the 50-yard line for the game. It was incredible.
Can you leave now? 50-yard
right,
line.
Sorry.
Yeah, that was about it. So from your incredible seats to the ball game, what stuck out the most to you, I guess, the way everything broke down, especially in the second half?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was very nervous going into this game. I'm a senior, so I've already witnessed one national championship win and one loss. So I was very nervous going in. I didn't sleep for a few days, so I was exhausted, yawning like the entire first quarter, surprisingly. But honestly, the game changer for me was when sophomore AJ Terrell had a pick six and ran back 42 yards, and that was one of two picks for that game. And I think that just kind of changed the whole momentum of the game. You know, Tua hasn't had very many all year. And I think for him, that was just he was just getting beaten up over and over again, and you could tell the whole Alabama team was just very let down early on in the game.
It was so unexpected, right? I mean, you haven't seen that kind of play from the Clemson secondary much at all this season. And for it to happen as early as it did, and the first 5 minutes of that game just being on tilt. You know, for me, when Saban, it was the second quarter, and I think it was 21-16, Clemson, and Saban decided to go for it on fourth and one from like his own 37-yard line. You know, I turned to the people watching with me at that time, and I'm like, if this wasn't Alabama, I would tell you that this is a desperate team that doesn't think they're going to stop Clemson the rest of the day, and they just basically sent you a message that they think the game is over if they can't keep scoring.
Yeah.
Turned out that's what it was anyway. You know, you're not expected to see things like that. So many out-of-character things. You see the interception from Tua. You see the questionable, you know, roll of the dice a couple of times from Nick Saban. You see what may be the worst fake field goal call in the history of football.
Terrible.
With the equivalent of me running into the line to block for Richmond.
Yes.
And we're two guys like 6 feet, 6 foot two, you know, maybe topping out at 200 pounds here, right? So I just think that were so many weird things. But the body language for Alabama, Richmond, I want to see if you agree with this, it wasn't good from the start.
No.
And I felt like that pick six that Ashley's referencing just loosened. Clemson already seemed like the looser and more relaxed team, but I think that just completely relaxed him, and it was go time from there.
Without a doubt, because obviously how Clemson started, three and out, it looked like, okay, Alabama was enforcing their will, and then was it going to be a situation where Tua, who all season long has been arguably the most accurate quarterback that I've ever seen, and all of a sudden you thought that the area that they could really thrive on was hitting Jerry Jeudy or that whole core of wide receivers that Tua could pick apart Clemson secondary. And then for Clemson secondary to make the first big defensive play. Now, it was a bad throw, but I think it was AJ disguised what he was going to do, and he read Tua's eyes and jumped on the pass. And that obviously set the tone. And I think it was big that it was what people said was the weakness of Clemson. They're secondary, and they performed. They got the job done on that one particular play, obviously.
And, Mark, I think you're completely right about the desperation aspect of Alabama. I mean, just being there and watching Saban from across the field, you could tell he was desperate to get more points on the board. And going into that game, everybody was saying that's going to be a game of who makes less errors than the other team. And I think early on you could tell that Clemson just came to win, and it was very obvious.
Yeah, I agree with you. The other thing that jumped out to me that was unexpected was the offensive line play. And the offensive line's been really strong this season. I mean, I have no complaints about the way that they played. Zero sacks. Trevor Lawrence had so much time on a lot of plays. Yeah. And the times that Alabama did get near Trevor Lawrence, the offensive line still bought him enough time. Right, they bought him enough time to be able to make the kind of plays. So many third down conversions through the air was ridiculous. And those are the times where you're usually worried the most. I think I read it was something like 200 plus out of the 325 yards that Clemson had through the air was on third down and more than five in a passing situation. That's a lot.
I think that's what was surprising, too. This was not like a third and two that Clemson was converting early on. I mean, it was third and 12, third and 14, you know, those type of things. And going back to the whole point about the desperation, I feel it. Saban was desperate in the first matchup, and that's why you had the onside kick.
Yep. And that is the only way that he knew.
He knew, and he talked about it at that time. He knew he had to be able to score points, and that was a desperation move. It just worked out that he also got a kick return for a touchdown. You know, that was able to actually put them over the top, or it could have been the other way.
That's a good point, and you've been hearing a lot about that, that when the Alabama teams, if you look back over the last 5 or 6 years, and I'm not taking anything away from Alabama, unbelievable football team, but when they don't have the physical dominance and it becomes a game of even, Nick Saban rolls the dice a lot, and he's been successful a lot, so more power to him. But you wonder now if that's getting exposed a little bit, and the teams that are in those close games, or when the physical matchup is a little bit more even, if people are going to be even more in tune to the fact that Nick might want to shake it up a little bit.
Yeah, and nobody wants to talk about it because it's all about the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody wants to say that, hey, could it be also that teams in the SEC weren't as good as everybody says they are, and that's why Alabama looked more dominant than they might have actually been.
I completely agree with that. And I did talk about this on the air a little bit yesterday. You take Alabama, the top team. They got beat by 28. Georgia, the alleged number two team in the Southeastern Conference. They got smacked by Texas. I think it ended up being a 7-point game when they scored late, but especially after all the running of their mouths they did, for it to end up the position that it ended up in was very surprising. So if you waited until the end of the season to make your call about how powerful the SEC is, I wasn't super impressed.
No, they were 6-6 in bowl games.
Yeah.
So I'm not a believer that the SEC is the all-dominant conference, and not just because I'm a Clemson guy and an ACC guy. I just don't see it. I think it's overrated. I think there's a commercialization for the SEC that it's just human nature that you become biased once you hear a certain talk track for 10-plus years. It's just the reality of it, and it's all based on one or two teams being dominant. It's not the whole conference that is that good.
So what does it take to undo that? We see that preseason every single year with the Big Ten. All of the pundits every year want to proclaim the Big Ten is going to be the strongest conference this year. It's going to be the hardest
top
one
to bottom
to come out of and win and get into a playoff, yet they fall flat year in and year out. What is it going to take to undo that, or can it be undone?
I don't think it can be undone. It's just human nature. It's human bias, and that's why companies spend billions of dollars on commercials, because it works. It changes people's habits, whether you believe it does or not. They wouldn't continue to spend this type of money on commercials if it didn't work. And I think that's the same thing that happens when all of these rankings, journalists and writers and media, they have a tendency to be lazy and just go with the overarching talk track. Oh, well, it's an SEC team. Must be good. Oh, it's Ohio State. They've got to be, a top team. Or Michigan. They've got to be a top team because that's just way they are.
So how do you feel about the American Athletic running ads all season long saying that we're just as good, if not better, than the Power Five conferences most of the time when we play? So they're declaring themselves a Power Six conference in their commercials. How do you feel about those?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be effective because at the end of the day, they got to play the other teams. And I know there's been some controversy about Central Florida and Florida playing, and I'm telling you, sorry, Central Florida, you've got to agree to some of the terms that Florida is laying out there.
Especially when you're going to declare yourself a national champion.
Yes, sorry, you've got to do it. If it's a 2-1, sorry, you've got to play it at Florida twice, and they'll come to your place. But you can't pick and choose, we're in the, leverage spot. No, unfortunately for you guys, Central Florida, Florida and other teams are in the leverage spot. So until you do that and then beat them, then you can talk.
I mean, the media is completely SEC biased. I was watching College Game Day before the national championship, and Paul Finebaum, he was trashing Clemson for like 3 hours. Mm-hmm. So I was thoroughly impressed with him after the game when I saw him tweet a couple things about, hats off to Clemson, great performance, yada, yada, yada. But still, I mean, watching it as a Clemson fan, I was just kind of like, you're not giving them any credit. You've seen what they've done all year. You have two undefeated teams coming into this game. You should be talking about them both equally.
Yep.
Yeah. There was at one point, to that point that you're listening to it, and I'm worried, hey, are we playing the 1970 Steelers here? I mean, this is apparently we're playing this team that is the most dominant ever. I'm getting nervous now.
Yep, no doubt. Well, I want to ask you guys about this coming up. There was something that Dabo said in his post-game speech. The people that were at the game didn't hear it, more than likely. So Ashley might not have heard it real time, but I think she heard it later. That stuck out the most to me. It was the most important thing said the entire week about Clemson football. I'll tell you what that is coming up in the next segment. Mark Childress in for Mark Sturgis, Ashley Pendergast, Richmond Weaver in studio with me. We're talking about the national championship just won by the Clemson Tigers. Phone lines are open, 844-477-3776. Got a couple of calls we're going to get to here in just a second. And then I'm going to tell you what I felt like was the most important thing said by Dabo Swinney or anyone having to do with Clemson football this week. Let's go to line one. We've got Gator Neal on board. He wants to talk about college football. What's up, Neal?
What's up, Mark, man? We spoke about a month ago and figured out that we actually used to work together. I remembered you
back
at Telecable when I used to help my buddy run the cameras for Furman football and basketball games. So
of
that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I remember that.
I don't remember how old you were, but I know I was in my mid-teens, so I was a young guy. But
yeah.
He had to be in his 40s at the time, at least.
A little bit older than you, Cater Neal. Can we change the subject about my age and move on to your question?
A couple things about the national championship game. First of all, going in, and as a Gator fan, I've been saying it for a couple of years now. I'm kind of on the other side as far as the SEC. The SEC is not as dominant and hasn't been over the last couple of years as they were because there's so many good players across the nation that can go anywhere. So it's not dominating like it was. And I understand why people get so upset with the ESPN and the media SEC bias. I mean, I would too if I pulled for Clemson or another school. I mean, it's everywhere. With that being said, Clemson is the only team in the country that just keeps getting the good players like Alabama that can compete with Alabama. And I've even said this, X's and O's wise, I think Dabo Swinney is a much better coach than Nick Saban, personally, when it comes just to X's and O's and the guys he has around him, which is what matters, the offensive and defensive coordinators. So when I was actually in my anniversary trip in Knoxville, I was in Gatlinburg, but watching a Knoxville news station, they had a little live call-in. What is the most probably the outcome that's probably not going to happen the most? And it was overwhelmingly that Clemson would win in a blowout. Yeah. Some people were picking Clemson to win, but not in a blowout. Personally, I called in and I said I thought that the one thing that I wouldn't see happening was Alabama to win in a blowout. First of all, I didn't think Tua was healthy, completely healthy. If he can't move, that takes away a lot of the things Alabama can do. Second of all, I thought Clemson, X's and O's wise, as far as talent, I thought they were just as good as Bama. X's and O's wise, I thought that they were probably the better team.
Oh, I think we lost Cater Neal there. Hey, but he's making some really good points. And the one I'm going to agree with the most is Dabo definitely outcoached Nick Saban on Monday. I don't think we have any argument there. And from an X's and O's perspective, it's tough. I mean, you talked about, you know, Nick feeling like he has to do some things differently, I guess, or take some chances in some of these games against Clemson and other big opponents in the past. Does that mean he's not as good as X's and O's as we give him credit for? Or does that mean he's even better than we're giving him credit for because he sees these holes and these windows where he can do something?
I think what also you have to really take into consideration for Nick Saban, and this can be viewed as something powerful to show you how good I think Nick Saban really is. His staff is always turning over.
Yes.
I mean, what was it, 13 or 16 assistants have left the program since the first national championship game between Clemson and Alabama? And what, Clemson's had two?
Yep. I think Alabama's lost two more this week as well, so it's even higher now.
When you look at it from that perspective, I mean, that's just amazing that Alabama's been able to continue their dominance in terms of a national program and powerhouse like they are with that type of turnover. And then now you look at Clemson on the flip side of that. I think the foundation seems to be stronger and more solid when you can keep a staff in place like Dabo Swinney has done. And so you've got to give both guys credit. One, for Nick Saban being able to continue to be having a team at that type of level with all the turnover, and then for Dabo not only being at that level, but also being able to keep the culture and the team, you know, together, so to speak, with very minimal turnover.
Well, I think that's the family aspect of it, too, and what Dabo pushes so hard on his players and on his staff. And, you know, Brent Venables is the second highest defensive coordinator paid in the country. So, I mean, if I were him, I wouldn't leave either. You have a great job. You have great recognition. You have a great team. And, you know, like Alabama, they are a dynasty, so they get the best recruits every year. And Clemson's starting to be just like that. You know, I think, like Laura Rutledge said the other day, Clemson still has a few more things to do before they are considered a dynasty, but they are moving in that direction.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Hey, phone lines are open. We're talking college football, national championship, Clemson, SEC, all of that stuff. 844-477-3776. Let's go to the phones now. We've got Delvin who wants to talk college football. Delvin, what's on your mind?
A couple things. First, what y'all talking about, this head coach, Delvin, I mean, he just lost another coach today, Dan Enos, who was going to be promoted to offensive coordinator. He went to Miami.
Yep.
Be that coordinator. So it's going to be interesting to see who Nick hires as his offensive coordinator because he lost both his – Well, you can say he lost all three of his main offensive guys. He lost Gaddis, the Rob Shue, coach from Michigan, to be the offensive coordinator. Of course, Lox is going to Maryland, and now Ennis is gone. I mean, man, that's a lot of turnover on the offensive side of the ball. So it'll be interesting who he gets on the offensive side of the ball. And number two, what do you think about – I love Trevor Lawrence's letter to the fans. Do you see a special message he wrote to the fans and the shout-out he gave to Chase Bryce in the offensive line?
Yeah, he's done nothing but – it's been nothing but class from Trevor Lawrence from the beginning. So, yeah, fantastic message to the fans calling out Chase. I mean, he's done everything perfectly. Feels like he's 35 years old, you know, even though he's just 19 doing this because he's doing everything spot on.
Yeah, just like Hunter Renfrow. You know, everybody jokes about how long he's been in college.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think Saban doubted that a freshman quarterback could beat his team, even though a freshman quarterback led his team to a national championship last year. But, you know, Trevor Lawrence, you have to remember, he's only 19 years old. He's a once-in-a-generation guy. And, I mean, hopefully Clemson's going to have him for two more years, if not one more year.
Yep. He did say in the postgame that he wanted to win three more titles. So
there you go.
He at least coached himself up well enough to know what the proper answer is. Because
yes.
If he'd have said two more titles, then he'd have taken a ton of heat for it. So, hey, one thing, I don't know if you caught this, Richmond, and Ashley, since you didn't get to hear the post game, you might have missed it, but this was the most important thing that I felt like was said before the game, during, after the game. Dabo's in his post game speech on ESPN. He says it twice. I can't wait until Friday. That's today now. I can't wait until Friday to sit down with my team and my coaching staff and start working on doing this all over again in 2019. If you're another coaching staff or anybody out there in the college football world that thinks you're taking down Clemson, good luck outworking Dabo and his staff. And a lot of folks would take the time, right? And he said, we're going to celebrate. He's done celebrating. They're back at it already. That, to me, unbelievably impressive. And that stood out to me the most of anything that I heard this week.
Yeah, definitely. And then you have to think about the fact that you have 17 mid-year guys coming in, highly yep. recruited, highly sought out by teams all over the country. And they're starting practice here next week.
Yep.
I think that's definitely something you need to think of and think about when you're trying to challenge Clemson this season.
I did hear that, and it's easy because right now the fun is in the winning. We've heard Dabo yeah. say that before. And
multiple times.
So yes, oh, I would agree 100% that that is telling that he's ready to continue this, not to rest on, okay, yeah, it sounds great to have, you know, two national championships as a coach under my belt, three for the university, but we're not done. We've got more. And as Clemson fans, you got to love hearing that type of talk.
We've got Matt Conley, who writes, of course, covers Clemson for the state newspaper. He's going to be coming on next segment. I'm looking forward to talking to him. I did want to ask the two of you, Trevor Lawrence, I mean, I felt like that he was, you know, behind the counter at a smoothie place, right? When he was being interviewed in the postgame, he was just so relaxed, said everything perfectly. He didn't have one bead of sweat anywhere. His hair looked great. I mean, I was just blown away by how laid back and mellow he is. I know you've been around him a little bit more than us because you had a chance to interview him a couple times, Ashley, and maybe even interface with him a little bit around school. I'm just trying to find the crack or the negative thing that I can find to you know, start worrying about around Trevor Lawrence. I'm having trouble coming up with it.
Yeah, I know ESPN was talking about on game day just the fact that they're waiting for him to have his freshman moment. And they thought it was going to come in the national championship game just because it's on such a large stage against a team like Alabama or Alabama in general. But he never had it. And I don't think he's ever going to have it. Like I just said, he's a once-in-a-generation guy, and he's just so calm about everything. And being at the Cotton Bowl in Jerry World and seeing him on the giant Jumbotron in the middle of the field, it was kind of funny because a couple times he was actually looking up at himself smiling because he could just see himself on the screen. And I just thought that was so telling of the kind of person he is and just how comfortable and relaxed he is with this team.
That had to be a surreal moment for him. I can't even imagine being able to see yourself like that. But I think you also have to look at the aspect, yes, there's DNA. He's built a certain way. God has touched him in a certain way, obviously with talent, but also just how he's naturally bent from a personality standpoint. And it seems like he can handle these type of situations. But then you have to look at it. I think he's been in a situation where he's had a lot of reps. And I'm talking about he started since he was a freshman in high school. So he's been in a lot of these pressure situations. And now with how the recruiting is, they are being interviewed. They are being talked about. They are having cameras in front of them, especially when you're at that type of level, five-star guy, going to all of these camps, and he's having a lot more exposure. So it's completely different than it was 20 years ago when a freshman would come in, and all of a sudden, this is the first time they're really being interviewed by an ESPN. He's been on ESPN before.
Yep.
He's been in these situations, and who knows how much coaching he has had, you know, leading up to actually becoming a student at Clemson. So there's that aspect of it as well. And that's not a knock on him saying, that, oh, that's the crutch. I'm just saying that you combine that with what he already has, just God-given talent. then you have this generational type of player that Ashley's referring to.
Yeah, and I think it's really great, too, how humble he is. You can just tell from these interviews how calm he is. He's just so humble. And to be that humble, you just won a national championship as a true freshman. You also made four guys transfer. Zarek Cooper, Tucker Israel, Hunter, and then Kelly Bryant. Like, that just never happens. And he has remained humble, and he has remained friends with these guys, and I just don't think you see that very often.
You know, I'd love to know the kind of guys that he's had the opportunity to reach out to. You know, NFL-level quarterbacks, retired greats, anybody like that he's had the chance to have conversations with. Because, obviously, once you're on that level and you're winning national championships and you're a five-star guy, they call you. Imagine fielding a phone call from Dan Marino or somebody like that saying, hey, man, you're great. I want to talk to you.
Well, there have been a couple of anecdotes. I know he's talked to Deshaun a number of times, but he's talked to Peyton Manning, who's his hero, by the way.
That's right.
And he wears number 16 because Peyton Manning wore number 16. So it was on one of the games. It might have been in the Cotton Bowl where they talked about him calling Peyton Manning. And he was too he was too afraid to leave a voicemail. And then Peyton called him right back. He's like, oh, Trevor, can you imagine?
Yeah, and I know he's worked a lot with Trent Dilfer as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Trent's been a huge fan of his because he does some of those high school quarterback camps and was the first person that I really saw that came out and started comparing him to people that you were like, wow, really? He's that good? And yeah, he's turned out to be that good. Hey, we've got more national title talk coming up. Matt Conley's been making the crazy trips that Ashley's been making the last couple of weeks out to the Cotton Bowl, out to the national championship. He's finally back over here on the East Coast getting settled. We'll talk to him coming up in the next segment. Welcome back in. Mark Childress in for Mark Sturgis. We've got Richmond Weaver and Ashley Pendergast in studio. Let's go to the phone lines now from the state newspaper, Mr. Matt Conley. Matt, you have flown all over the country in the last, 10 or 12 days. Are you back? Did you take some time off? Are you back at it again tomorrow? Are you coming up for the parade and the basketball game? What's going on?
Yes, I got back Wednesday night pretty late. Took yesterday off, did a little bit of work today, and then I'll be back full go tomorrow at the parade and then obviously the big basketball game tomorrow afternoon. So never really stops, but hopefully going to catch my break a little bit next week as well and then get right back after it.
What was the biggest or most impactful moment, I guess, of the national championship game for you or the moment where you sensed as a sports writer that Clemson was going to win the ball game?
That's a good question. It might have been even pretty early on when Alabama went for it on 4th-and-1 from its own 35. I think at that point, and even though they got the first down right there, I think at that point I kind of realized Nick Saban knows that he doesn't really have any answers for Clemson. He doesn't think they can stop him. He doesn't think they can slow him down. And to me, that was kind of desperation mode when you're going for it on your own 35 that early in the game. It just kind of speaks to, I think, his mindset and what he thought of his defense's ability to stop Clemson, and then also kind of how dire it was as far as trying to gain some momentum. So that was probably it for me, even pretty early in the game.
Hey, Matt, Ashley Pendergast here. Both of us were there to cover the Cotton Bowl and the national championship game, so we were able to go to media day 2 days before this game and talk to Tua and Trevor. What did you see from both of those guys? You know, Tua's a true sophomore, Trevor's a true freshman. Did you think that one seemed more relaxed than the other?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think both of them were pretty calm and cool and collected. That's kind of something that they displayed throughout the year on the field and in interviews. Obviously, we talked with Trevor a lot more. He did a good job throughout the year of answering every question and going through everything that happened with Kelly Bryant and the quarterback change and everything, and nothing seemed to really bother him. So I didn't spend as much time around Tua this year, but I think both of those guys, for the most part, were pretty cool and calm, and maybe Trevor a little bit more so, but that could also be just because I spent more time around them. But yeah, I think they're both kind of similar off the field as far as doing a good job of dealing with the media and that kind of stuff.
They were hanging out with Matt Connolly from the state. Matt, a lot of talk right now, I guess, about what's the new narrative in college football, right? Is Alabama on the decline? Is it that we should have been talking about Alabama and Clemson together? I know you haven't had a lot of time to gear down for the national championship game, but as you start thinking about the 2019 season, how's that narrative going to be sitting in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way I look at it is these two teams are pretty, or these two programs are pretty equal right now. That's kind of what I wrote for my game story after the game. It's not like it was just Deshaun Watson and he lifted Clemson way up, and it wasn't something that Clemson could sustain. I mean, Clemson clearly belongs on the same level as Alabama now after what they did Monday night. And you look at everything that they're bringing back. I personally, you know, I've seen some preseason polls that have Alabama ahead of Clemson, but I just have a hard time seeing that right now after what I just watched on the field Monday night and knowing that a lot of those pieces on Clemson's offense in particular will be back next year. I know Clemson's got a lot to replace on defense, but it's hard to bet against Brent Venables and everything he's done. So, you know, I think Clemson is right there as a program with Alabama, and over these next couple of years they have a chance to pass them if they can win a couple more national titles with Trevor Lawrence there.
So, Matt, you know, like you just said, you think that Clemson and Alabama are on the same level now. And I think all of us kind of expect to see those two teams continue to play each other in the college football playoffs. But, you know, we also saw a lot of uproar when these two teams got in this game, just saying the viewership's going to go down. Many people were upset that it was the same game again for the fourth year in a row. Do you think this is going to have an impact on how many people are going to watch this game, or do you think it continues to be kind of a competitive thing that everyone wants to see who's going to win every year?
Yeah, I think there might be a little bit of fatigue, but I think that the people that are kind of tired of it are the ones that are missing out. I mean, these were clearly the two best teams throughout the year. I think Georgia, you know, there was a lot of talk about Georgia going into the postseason, but the way they played against Texas kind of proved that they weren't really ready for that moment. And so I think, you know, Clemson and Alabama are clearly the top two right now. And I think people should just get on board with it and enjoy it. I mean, this is rare to have two teams like this that are this dominant during a decade or a period of several years. So, you know, people may get fatigued, but I think if so, they're the ones that are missing out, that they should just enjoy these matchups and enjoy these games and kind of take it all in. Because like you said, I mean, I think they'll be right back again next year. And probably even for the foreseeable future. I know people are kind of thinking Alabama's on the decline, but if you look at what they're doing in recruiting and just the history of Nick Saban, I have a hard time seeing them dropping off too far as long as he's still there.
We're talking with Matt Connolly from the State. Matt, there was also a lot of talk before the game that the game should have never been played out on the West Coast. Ticket prices, you know, the bottom dropped out. From your perspective, getting to go out there, I felt like after the game ended that a lot of the national media was like, hey, the stadium ended up being really nice. This was a great experience. We got treated really well. Did you feel differently before going into the game? Did you feel different after? Did that change at all?
My mindset and my thought is that it still probably didn't need to be played way out there. I mean, it was, you know, they ended up filling up the stadium pretty well, and there was obviously a lot of excitement in the game. But still, the buildup all week leading up to it, this wasn't there like you would think it would be for a national championship game. There were people, there was the tweet that went viral about, oh yeah, I think Alabama's playing Syracuse, you know, from hotel employees and stuff. I mean, there just wasn't a whole lot of buzz just being around there that whole week. It's not really a college football hotbed, and the interest wasn't there other than from Clemson and Alabama fans that were in town. So I personally would like to see it, you know, stay on this side the country, or at least places where there's more interest for college football. With that said, you know, they did treat us very well, and I think everyone who was out there covering the game and attending the game had a great time. But I'm just not sure the buzz is there out there in that part of California.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. It was very disappointing to see the lack of understanding from the local people of California. But with that being said, what do you think having the game on the West Coast will do for Clemson's recruiting, trying to recruit guys on the West Coast and in California?
Yeah, that can certainly help. I mean, they made a trip out to California to go talk with some recruits before the game, and I'm sure having that exposure out there, just more and more people. It's still crazy to me how many people don't know where Clemson is. I had someone in the airport trying to figure out where Clemson was in the Dallas airport coming home, so I think the more Clemson plays in these kind of games and goes to different parts of the country and continues to play well and gets more exposure, the more it helps. And obviously California has as much talent just about as anyone in high school. So certainly that'll help Clemson continue to kind of recruit throughout the country.
So we're wrapping things up with Matt Conley from the State. So, Matt, two quick questions for you, the most important ones yet. So I was trying to have Matt on during the 5 o'clock hour, and he said, hey, I'm having date night tonight. Can we move that up? So where are you going for date night tonight? Have you got big plans?
Yeah, we're going to Dudley's. It's a really good restaurant in Spartanburg that my wife and I really like. So we haven't had date night since early December, so finally going to get around and get to do that again, which will be nice.
Very good, very good. And then what kind of content can we expect to see from you in the next few days? I'm assuming big stuff on the parade and, like you said, the basketball game. What else you got?
Yes, I've got 7 heroes for Clemson this year, and then that's up now. And then I've got 7 defining moments for Clemson season that'll be coming out later this weekend. The parade coverage, obviously, tomorrow. We'll have videos, photos, and stories from that. And then the basketball game, like you said, and just kind of looking ahead, start looking ahead to next year a little bit next week. So plenty more covers coming at thestate.com.
Fantastic stuff as always from Matt Conley. Hope to see you in Clemson tomorrow, Matt. Thanks so much for joining us. And again, Matt Conley from the State newspaper. You can find all his stuff at thestate.com. More college football talk coming up next. Mark Childerson for Mark Sturgis. We've got Richmond Weaver and Ashley Pendergast in studio. World's Most Decent Sports Producer Diesel in here with us as well. Hey, phone lines are open here for the last segment of the hour, 844-477-3776. Jump in with us if you want. Bulldog Brock wants to talk some college football. Bulldog Brock, what's on your mind?
Hey guys, good afternoon. First of all, being a Georgia Bulldog fan, it's been really awesome to get to a higher level than what we were with Mark Richt, but it's also more painful because 2 years in a row we just couldn't finish the job. But that's not what I wanted to talk about. What I wanted to say is kudos to Clemson. It's been really neat to see someone besides Alabama win a championship in 2 out of 3 years is pretty cool. But I wanted to give you guys a word of caution because as good as this is, and this is just my opinion, if Alabama is in fact on the start of a decline, you Clemson fans would hope that it's not going to last too long because good old Dabo is a graduate from there. And I believe that if they start on a decline for more than a couple of years, his phone's going to ring. And when Sweeney's boy gets out and Venable's boy gets out, I have no reason to doubt that Dabo would certainly move over there and keep the tradition going with Alabama. I'll hang up and listen to you guys' comments, but hey, congratulations. Enjoy being on top while you guys are. Who knows what's going to happen, but that's just my opinion. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you, Bulldog Brock. And I see Richmond Weaver just shaking his head when he's talking about Dabo going to Alabama. You don't think that's going to happen, huh?
I don't. Never say never. And we just heard Dabo mention that on Stephen A. Smith in terms of how he's been contacted by the NFL in the past, and you can never say never. And so I'll never say never. I just feel that what you're seeing that he's building at Clemson is something very unique. And as much as you have this lean towards and gravitational pull towards your alma mater, because I understand that, you know, me with Clemson, but I just don't see him at a point where he would want to go and try to all of a sudden build something totally, I mean, it would be the same, but it's different because it's at a whole nother school. I just don't know if he actually has the desire to do that. He's got it all right here.
Yeah.
I mean, this is almost now his alma mater, basically, because of what he's been able to do and the love that he's gotten here. And the way I see it, and I think you know, it has been talked about previously on some other shows, is that there's two distinct things with Clemson and Alabama right now. And you can do it both ways.
Right.
Alabama is a factory. Mm-hmm. And you can have success that way. Obviously, we see it. Clemson is a family.
Mm-hmm.
And Dabo is, he's that family type of guy. Not to say he can't go to Alabama and build a family there, but I just don't see him leaving any time. But I'm not saying that it can never happen. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it'll happen.
Yeah, I go back and forth on this topic a lot because, you know, sometimes I think, obviously I don't think Dabo would ever follow Nick Saban, ever. I think there has to be a coach in between as a buffer, because I don't think Dabo would want to follow him up in what he's built there. But I also go back and think, you know, he was only a walk-on at Alabama. So, yeah, that's his alma mater. But he has built his entire legacy All of his sons go to Clemson. You know, his entire family's here. They just built a castle around the corner. So he has built so much from the ground up. His wife has the All In Foundation. And I just don't think that you could just leave all of that, pick up and leave everything to go back to a school that you were just a walk-on at.
You couldn't, I mean, could you find coaches that were more different than Dabo and Nick Saban? Like you said, factory versus family and the way that they do it, it would almost be a complete reboot of everything that Nick had done for Dabo to do, and that would take a couple of years.
And also, if you're an SEC fan, you don't want Dabo in your league. You want him to stay right where he is, because if you're a Georgia fan, you may play Clemson once a decade.
Yeah.
But you got to play Alabama almost every single year. And if Dabo moves to Alabama, Alabama's not going anywhere. You want that team to fall. You want Alabama to drop off. That way you can step up and become the man again.
Yep. No, completely agree with you. Hey, back to the phone lines, and they're still open, 844-477-3776. Steven wants to talk about Dabo. Steven, what's up?
Hey, so, yeah, I don't think he would go to Alabama, and I don't think he would really fit at Alabama either. I've said this before, but I really believe, like, 95% of success in life is finding a place where your personality fits the culture of the place. For Nick Saban, that's been Alabama. And to an extent, you could say the whole SEC with the factory mentality and just grind it out and just win and move on to the next thing and not really taking the time to take the join it. Dabo has built the family thing, but, and now I'm not from here, so I can't say, but from what I understand, they like to say there's something in these hills, and it's kind of that quirky little aw shucks mentality of that whole town, that whole university to begin with. And I think he just really very well fits into that and knows it and won't leave because of that.
Yeah, Steven, I agree with you about the personality having to match the program. When I was covering the college football playoff a couple days ago, actually, they had a photo op with the two coaches and the trophies. And I just had to laugh because during the press conference, you know, Dabo was so excited to be there. And Nick Saban just kind of had a frown on his face, hunched over, you know, didn't really interact too much. And then when they went to go take a picture, you know, you got this awkward smile from Nick Saban. And I mean, it was just very uncomfortable for me to watch because Dabo was so excited and almost hugging the trophy. And then Nick Saban was just kind of sitting there frowning, you know, half smile. It was just very weird. So I do think that Steven's right about having a personality that has to match the program that you're building.
It's interesting. I don't think it's coming anytime soon.
Definitely,
I don't think Nick Saban's
going
anywhere anytime soon. That is the first time that I felt like on the sidelines that Saban looked his age. You know, he's always got so much energy, and he never looks older and frail. He didn't look completely frail, but he definitely looked different in that game and seeing it at the end. And once you see that weakness, if you're another team, a lot of times that's all it takes. And I don't think Alabama's going anywhere.
I don't either.
I think we're going to have round five next season. I wouldn't bet against it.
Yeah.
Would you? I mean, I don't know what team's going to jump in there. Both of these teams are going to be loaded again next year. It's the two best quarterbacks in college football with Tua and Trevor. I don't think you're going to have anybody any better than them. So you're going to have to outscore them. Both teams losing so much on defense. I think four defensive linemen have left early now for the Crimson Tide, and the entire defensive line appears to be leaving for Clemson as well. Well, they definitely are, with Klee announcing yesterday. So lots of new faces next year, and they'll still be really, really good. Well, that's a good first hour of the show today. Again, Richmond Weaver, Ashley Pendergast, Mark Childress here. More college football talk coming up in hour number two, and we're going to talk some NFL.